Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Serie A fan. It's been a busy week in Italian football. Napoli go clear at the top, Atalanta break the Turin curse, and Milan gets the swallowed. Not to mention the World Cup qualified playoff draw and the Feds at Juventus. Naturally, there's no time for nonsense, and definitely no time for long digressions about Maradona kits and Harry Redknapp, but we get round to it all the same. Plus beers, honourable mentions, and the easiest bad week award ever, on this episode of Scudetto. Hello, and welcome to episode number 62 of Scudetto. Now, I know I say this every week, but it really is a big episode this week. Loads of stuff going on, mostly on the pitch, but also some off-pitch drama as well. So let's keep the introductions to a minimum amount of nonsense, Boaz. But with that in mind, I think you wanted to tell us a short story from your evening.
I just wanted to say that I went to a show called Pacacucha this evening, and it's the first time I've been out in a year and a half, or rather since my son was born. So it's nice to go on a date. It ended fantastically.
First time you've been out? The first time you've been out on a date?
First time we've been out together since our son was born.
And back just in time to record a podcast. That is commitment, and that's why you earned your honorable for 100% commitment last season.
To be fair, our time zones allow me to be on a little bit later, but considering recent results, I almost considered pulling a sickie again today.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that shortly, but I'm honored to have you. And what are you drinking for this occasion?
I've got Beer Bazaar, Everything is Going to Be All Right, 5.6 ale. Should be good.
Yeah, very topical, given the first talking point about Italy's international affairs. But how about you, Kenny? How are you getting on?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, Oscar. I wouldn't have, unlike Boaz, I wouldn't have missed this week's episode for, you know, the opportunity to gloat. I've just been holed up in my house, really. So no exciting outings for me. But I have got my hands on a podcast, a thesaurus favorite, which is Drygate Brewing Company's Disco Forklift Truck Mango Pale Ale. I've had it quite a few times, and it's quite good, so I bought it again.
Good stuff. And have you got your thesaurus out to give us some adjectives to describe the flavor and texture?
I thought you were going to ask me to get my thesaurus out to see if I could rename and rebrand this beer with similes.
Well, that could be a fun activity. But as I said, minimum.
Let's
nonsense.
Leave that for the Christmas special.
Cool. Well, I have got an Italian beer. Felt like they maybe needed the moral support this week. It's Birrifico Angelo Poretti. I don't know if it's really Italian or if it's just branded as Italian. You ever heard
it
of
is.
That one?
It is. Yeah, it is. Poretti. Yep.
Okay.
The classic.
Anyway, it's smooth and aromatic, according to the label. So let you know how that one goes down.
It's a poor man's Moretti, unless they want to sponsor us, in which case it's a great beer.
That's how they came up with the name, Poretti.
Lovely. And speaking of poor Italian things, I think that's, we've already kind of covered the course of events that led them to be in this playoff draw, but pretty tricky. We were just talking about it off air, but they're first up north in Macedonia. And if they win that, they'll be playing Portugal away, or most likely be playing Portugal away, assuming that they win their first game, which is against
Turkey. And to be fair, even going to Turkey is no walk in the park. So
yeah, I mean, it's just about as tough as it possibly could be, really, isn't it? The one team that Italy wanted to avoid in the draw was Portugal. And not only would they have to face Portugal, assuming that they make it that far, but they would have to play Portugal away. So it's not going to be easy. But I reiterate what I said last week. Italy have got to, you know, they're European champions. They've just just got to believe that they can beat anyone.
Well, didn't Mancini say, like, they were trying to avoid us as well? And obviously,
yeah, which is fair enough.
You need to have, yeah.
And as I said, as just to reiterate myself as well, Italy only conceded 2 goals in the whole qualification for the World Cup. So it's a freak of nature that they are in this situation. In any other group, they probably would have already been automatically qualified. And it's a little bit unfair that they now have to go away from home. I'm not sure. Maybe it should have been a neutral venue. But first, they'll have to beat North Macedonia. And we'll see. Hopefully that's going to happen at the very least.
Maybe we'll get into that a little bit more closer to the time. But let's move on to the Serie A weekend, because it was a big one, wasn't it? I mean, I guess we should start at the top of the league, which is now Napoli, who very now clearly at the top of the league after destroying Lazio. Kenny, it doesn't look like they're missing Osimhen or Anguissa at all just yet, does it? Incredible performance.
No, I have to hold my hands up and say that my fears for Napoli appear to have been unfounded, because they were absolutely incredible. They didn't miss those two, Anguissa or Osimhen. Dries Mertens was on absolute fire. And I mean, they just completely outplayed Lazio in every department. I mean, they were they looked hungrier, they were closing down quicker, they were moving the ball faster and sharper, some great goals. And second half, they came out leading 3-0, and they even had enough of a comfort zone to take the foot off the gas a little bit, but they didn't do it in a way where they sat back. They just completely controlled the game, slowed the tempo down a little bit, and got the late goal as well, just to kind of put the gloss on the scoreline. A really, really impressive performance. And you have to say, I think that is, it's too early to talk about champions, obviously, but that is, I think, the sign of a champion. They often say, you know, the sign of a champion is to win when you're playing badly. But for me, a bigger sign of a champion is that you get the game done early, you put it out of sight, and then you just control the game from there on in, and you don't run yourself into the ground, because you've got plenty of European football coming up and coming into the Christmas break. Just really incredible, incredible performance. Possibly their best of the season. I mean, I say that having not watched all of their games, but I've watched a fair amount of Napoli, and I haven't seen them as impressive as they were in that opening streak. I haven't seen them be this dominant against one of the top guns. So, yeah, a real marker laid down, I think.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that Lazio looked a little bit underwhelming as well, though? I think they've been struggling on the road quite a bit this season.
Yeah, I think so. But also has to be said, in fairness to Lazio, that much as they were outplayed in that first half, they did have some good opportunities of their own. And I think Ospina on one occasion making a save from a wonderful Luis Alberto effort as well. So yeah, they were below par, and Immobile apologized to the fans for it afterwards as well. But I think the story really from this game is just how good Napoli were.
Yeah, fair enough. Baz, did you want to chime in there? I saw you were talking, but I think you're muted.
No, I was pretending to talk, but what I do want to say... I was pretending to move my list, but what I do want to say is, touching on what Kenny said, is that Lazio are incredibly inconsistent this year. This was their second defeat in a row, and also the third time they lose a so-called game against the Big Eight, or the Eight Sisters, as you mentioned. It feels that in Sarri's tactics, there's a real need for some wing backs, and the players that he's inherited, like Patrick, like Mausic and Lazari, who are there, they don't really fit his tactics, and therefore they Patric had a nightmare against Insigne in the first half and was probably taking off in the 45th minute at halftime. So moving from the Inzaghi's 4-3-3 to Sarri's 3-5-2 was pretty it's pretty jarring apparently to the Lazio players.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, but I mean that was a choice of Sarri's, right, to put Patrick at right back, where Lazzari is the obvious choice if you want a full back.
I think he doesn't have a natural fit for these positions. I think the guys he has are either too offensive or too defensive and don't quite fit into what he needs from his wingbacks.
Yeah. Okay, one more thing I wanted to touch on this game before we go on to Milan Bars. We've discussed these special shirts that Napoli players have been wearing before. I thought they looked quite good in the Diego shirts, but I was a bit confused by seeing the manager coming out in one. It was a curious choice, wasn't it?
Once again, I get to say that Spalletti is a pretty strange man, and so when a strange man does strange things, it's not that surprising. Very, very, very amusing and bizarre.
How are you feeling about the kits, though?
I have to admit, I wish they could be better. It feels like it was done on MS Paint circa 1995, and I feel that, you know, maybe a better photo could have been used, maybe something a little bit clearer, but perhaps there's regulations about what kind of stuff you're allowed to have on your shirt, and this is where they skirt it.
I'm sure the stylists at Armani will take your views into consideration.
Yeah, what did you think, Kenny? I quite like those shirts. I think they're not maybe quite as good as the Halloween editions.
I don't mind it, to be honest. I think my main complaint is that I don't see why they needed to have three versions of it. That just seems like outrageous sort of cashing in at the supporters' expense. But I mean, for this game, had it been for this game alone, then it would have been quite fitting. But I have to share the amusement that Spalletti coming out with the tracksuit top with the shirt under it. All he was missing was like a hot dog, and he would have looked like it had been that time that Harry Redknapp called a punter out of the stands to manage a Tottenham Hotspur game all those years back.
Yeah, I was saying earlier, maybe he just wanted to model it for the fans so they'd know what it would look like on them, because obviously it looks very different.
On a non-footballer's physique.
Yeah, precisely.
And all this, of course, since we're talking about Diego, also comes in the week when the Diego Maradona statue was unveiled outside of the Napoli stadium. I mean, it looks fine. It's not on the level of Cristiano Ronaldo's statue. But the one thing that's weird is that... The one thing that's weird is that he's controlling the ball with his right foot, with his right leg. It's kind of on his knee, which is kind of factually incorrect. But I guess the artist didn't have millions of photos and hours of footage to refer to.
Yeah, well, I have to say I quite enjoyed Spalletti's ode to Maradona in the press conference afterwards. Where, I don't know, it was just really thoughtful. I mean, we kind of mocked him there for turning up with the Maradona shirt on. But, you know, what he said about Maradona and what he meant to the players and how he raised the game of the players around him and how he, you know, had a way of being incredible, being out of this world, but then having sort of being able to connect with the sort of everyday person. I mean, Ciro Ferrara, I think we've spoken about it before, but Ferrara, when Maradona passed away last year, was on an Italian radio show that Boaz and I listened to, and he was saying how I think he bought, it was either himself or one of the other young players in the Napoli team was turning up on a scooter to training and things, and he basically bought him a car, not like an amazing car or anything, but bought him a car to turn up in and things. And I think things like that, it's nice that Spalletti kind of referenced that he had that connection, and I guess that's what made him such a, not just obviously the greatest player probably in the world ever, but just made him such a good fit for Naples, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for sharing that, Kenny. I'm aware that I said we're going to just be very on topic today and avoid any nonsense, and then I just kicked off a 5-minute tangent about Maradona shirts. So,
all right, I'll stop rambling. I'm sorry.
No, it was a good tangent, but let's get back on track now, and let's come to Milan's loss to Sassuolo. What did you make of this one, Buzz? I saw that in the press, there was a lot of plaudits going to Berardi and Scamacca, and some definitely some suspect defending from Milan. But did you think it was a deserved loss?
So contrary to what we said in the last episode and previous episodes, in this past weekend, it felt like Napoli's back line, let's say the players who are not in the starting 11 but coming straight in, like Lozano, like Mertens, they were spectacular. Whereas the players Milan chose to substitute either because of injuries or because Pioli, for some reason, decided this was the match for a lot of rotation. In any case, they just weren't up to par. Milan started this game on fire. They were in Sassuolo's area about 5 to 10 times in the first 20 minutes. Unfortunately, more than half of those times were offside, particularly one Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who is slightly slower than what he was in his good days. And so Sassuolo seemed to make a point of putting him offside, but really like a little bit smarter football, and Milan could have been in front of the keeper. And the few times that he was able to free himself, his decision making wasn't fantastic. So overall, Milan were not stellar. But once they went 1-0 up, you'd think this is the time to shut this game down. You're playing at home, and instead, within 3 minutes, Scamacca scored what looked like a world goal, worldie, and kind of a candidate for Kenny's goal of the week. But then, if you kind of look at the bigger picture, he gets the ball. The ball is given to him by a Milan player. There doesn't seem to be any Milan player within 5 to 10 meters from him. So yeah, it's an amazing goal. I recommend people check it out, because he does kind of clean the cobwebs from the top corner. But I mean, it looks like a training ground goal. There's no one around him. And then Milan then conspired to score an own goal with Chiari, which is a little bit unfortunate. But it just felt like I said last week, where maybe mentally they were a little bit too cocky. Maybe they weren't up for it. They were second best to every goal. And bar those first 20 minutes where they really could have gone way ahead, Sassuolo were very dangerous throughout. And of course, Mimmo Berardi got on the score sheet. That's his 10th goal against Milan. And I think maybe if we tell him that he's playing Milan instead of Portugal in March, maybe he'll get like a hat trick.
Yeah. How much do you think Milan suffered from the missing players? Obviously, not having Tomori at the back and Rebic still out for a while.
So Rebic is an interesting one, because I felt that the left wing is a little bit more vulnerable with Theo playing there. And if Rebic kind of gives him a little bit more protection, whereas Leao, who was playing this week, is a little bit more offensive. And Tomori is a big miss. With him on the pitch, Milan have conceded 11 goals in 12 matches. And in the last two games without him on the pitch, they've conceded 7 goals. Now, you look at 7 goals, that's already a worrying stat. But in the two matches against Fiorentina and Sassuolo, Milan not only conceded 7 goals, but they conceded 25 shots. So it's kind of a worrying stat. And it's normal, as I said last year, that teams may drop a little bit of off the pace at times in the season. But having played all the direct games against the Seven Sisters, this was the time for Milan to maybe start breaking away. And possibly with a big game to come from Napoli, which we've already discussed, it was a time to put some pressure on Napoli. Instead, not very good performance, and Sassuolo deserved the win.
Yeah, and what that result does do, though, is kind of reopen the title race, perhaps even further, with obviously Inter moving up to within 1 point of Milan. Atalanta also picking up points against Juventus this weekend, Kenny, which is obviously a big result. You watched this one. What was the was it overall deserved victory?
Well, I mean, let me start off by saying, putting that into context, you said it was a big result. It's the first time that Atalanta have beaten Juventus in Turin in Serie A since 1989, when a certain Claudio Caniggia was playing for Atalanta and scored the winning goal. It was an absolutely huge result for Atalanta.
It's only form that's important, as the book is saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is you're not the only person to talk about Atalanta being in a Scudetto race, and I would be on Gasperini's kind of page here by saying that let's keep our feet on the ground. If Atalanta can qualify for the Champions League again, that would be a sensational achievement 4 years in a row. And what this does is it puts 7 points between Atalanta and Juventus. Is now looking like it's Roma are the closest challengers really to for that fourth spot. So an absolutely huge result. In terms of the performance, it wasn't the prettiest really to be totally honest. But I think that's kind of hard to avoid when you're playing against an Allegri side. And I mean, he's getting, I've particularly been quite critical of the football that Juve have been playing under Allegri, but I do think it's true that they tend to drag the opposition down to their level. And Atalanta have to be praised for an incredible work rate, a sensational defensive performance. I mean, there was the Juan Musso save, which happened, I think, about moments. It might have been a matter of 2 minutes or so after he went down clutching his left shoulder. Mm-hmm. In pain, and then a fingertip save to deny Rabiot, I think it was.
Yeah. And I'm not convinced obviously it was going in.
I think it was. I think when you see it from behind Rabiot, I think it looks like it's kind of bending that way. But regardless, incredible for him to pull that out, you know, moments after going down with that injury.
He does very, very well to get to it.
Absolutely, and there was a moment as well where Toloi, who has only recently come back from injury himself, got back and put in an absolutely sensational last-ditch tackle on Chiesa, when for all the world it looked like Juve were going to equalize. So, I mean, Juve had their chances in this game, but Atalanta just worked their absolute socks off, and it wasn't one for the neutral, really. But I mean, Atalanta, Zapata took his chance absolutely fantastically. And when you're away from home against the highest spending team in Serie A, all you can do is celebrate a result like that, I think. So, fantastic. And fantastic to see Gasperini going back to Zingonia afterwards, appearing at, like, I think about 11 o'clock in the evening or something. Oh, no, it must have been later than that. But being given a hero's welcome and actually getting out of the car to kind of be in amongst the fans and things. So this meant a lot, I think, to the people of Bergamo, and hopefully they've got this monkey off their backs. Onwards and upwards, I think. One final point to make that is that we all spoke about how Atalanta started the season a little bit slowly. It is now official that Atalanta at this stage in the season have more points than they have ever had in Serie A. So there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we move on, we should, though, in complete contrast, look at it from the Juventus perspective, capping off a pretty terrible week for them. Obviously, the destruction of them by Chelsea in the Champions League. And then this police investigation. So it's over financial irregularities over several of the past seasons. We don't know too many of the details. We do know that their offices have been raided by the Italian police. Anything to add? You've been following this story a bit more closely than me, Kenny.
Yeah, well, I mean, Boaz has also, I think, been following it. I think it's somewhere in the high 200 million euros worth of transfer dealings that are being investigated. Essentially, the suggestion is they've been cooking the books to make their profits look better than they are. Whether the reasoning behind that, we can't speculate, obviously, but certainly it would help with things like financial fair play. We have to be very careful, because there are, beyond footballing reasons, there is the fact that Juventus are listed and have to report their financial results to the stock market. So this is something which is possibly goes beyond football, really. And it is Agnelli, Nedved, and Paratici, obviously, of Spurs, who are also personally under investigation, as well as the club. And it's not it doesn't look good. It is part of a broader investigation involving other clubs, but I think when we spoke about this at the time the story was breaking, I said I can't believe that all of these transfers that are being investigated are Juventus and Napoli. It seems like the majority of them do involve actually Juventus, and it's over the course of 3 seasons, I believe. So there have been all sorts of suggestions about what sort of punishment could be dished out if they were found, what sort of sporting punishment could be dished out if they were found guilty. People are, I know that the Consumer Protections Association in Italy is demanding that they have titles stripped from them and they get relegated to Serie B. There is precedent here with clubs having been deducted points for similar accusations. So, I mean, that could happen. We just don't know. And it's, I think the only thing that we can say is that it has been a horrible week, like you said, for Juventus. How big this story is going to be in the grander scheme, I guess we're yet to find out. But it doesn't look good.
No, it definitely doesn't. Baz, was there anything you wanted to add to that?
There is not a lot I can add without getting sued by anyone listening to this podcast. All I can say is that a lot of the deals that are being looked at are to do with swap deals where players were assigned potentially inflated prices. And there's also a couple of agents, including super agents, Mino Raiola and George Mendes, whose fees from certain transfers have been astronomical. The one that sticks out the most is the 10.5 million that Mino Raiola made off the Ligt deal, which is a nice payday. And maybe this is something that touches on you guys a little bit, but apparently the Torino police called this the Paratici method. So apparently he was in charge of making as much fictitious money on these transfers as possible.
Yeah, I'm sure Mr. Levy won't be too happy to hear that.
To be fair, the way Mr. Levy runs his club, maybe now that he knows the guy he's hired is a whiz at making the most out of allegedly fictitious transfers, maybe he will be even happier.
Maybe, although I'm sure he won't like it that it's come to the attention of the Turin police. Anyway, we digress. Let's talk about the other team that are in the title race. Inter, obviously, picking up points this weekend and out of the Champions League group for the first time in 10 years. It's been a good week for Inter, hasn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're not preempting one of the upcoming segments there. But
well, I'm sure nobody would be able to guess who might be getting bad week.
Well, it's a mystery, is all I could say. Yes, it's been a fantastic week for Inter. I mean, that huge result last weekend, then qualifying from their group in the Champions League for the first time in 10 years. And can I just say kudos to Simone Inzaghi for guiding them to that, something that they didn't manage under the otherwise hugely successful Antonio Conte. Yeah, it's been fantastic. I have to hold my hands up and say, hold my hands up for the second time this week and say this wasn't one of the games that I watched, but I did see that the highlights of it. And by all accounts, it sounds like Çalhanoğlu had a very good game, just judging by the reaction of people who follow Inter closely. It's looking, I think we spoke 2 weeks ago, or maybe I wasn't here 2 weeks ago, maybe it was 3 weeks ago. When we spoke, I said that Inter were just about the third team in the title race. Well, I mean, that's been blown out of the water now. Shows you how much I know, because if Milan are still in the title race, then Inter absolutely are, because they're only a point behind now. And if momentum is as important in sport as people would have you believe, and I personally actually think there is a lot to that, then possibly it's beginning to look like, after Milan losing 2 league games on the spin, possibly it's looking like Inter might be Napoli's biggest challengers. So yeah, absolutely fantastic week for them.
Yeah, it might be tricky for Milan to be retaining their winter champions title this Christmas. Before But anyway, we will...
That might be a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, maybe.
It didn't bode well last time.
That's true. But yeah, still a few games to play and a midweek round coming up. No particularly... no clashes between the top eight, but definitely some potential banana skins for a few teams. Atalanta taking on Venezia. Juve have got Salernitana away. Inter Spezia. Milan taking on Genoa. What's your pick of these midweek games, Kenny?
Yeah, it's a bit like what you said, really. There's no obvious blockbuster. I think Fiorentina-Samp looks quite interesting, to be honest. Samp have finally started to kind of turn the corner. Fiorentina, perhaps, are slightly going the other way after the result against Empoli at the weekend. So, I mean, that could prove a very, very tricky challenge for them. And could, I guess, see them fall out of the equation for Champions League if we actually believed that they were in the Champions League race. I personally think they would be happy with European qualification after what they've endured in recent seasons. The other one you probably have to look at as being quite interesting is Sassuolo-Napoli, which I think is one that you actually picked out, Oscar, before we started recording. The thing to say about that is obviously that Sassuolo have had some huge results, but they have also been very inconsistent. So, I mean, yes, they've beaten Milan and Juve, but equally they've, you know, struggled. I mean, what comes to mind? I think a point against Genoa. I think before they beat Milan last week. Yeah, exactly. So,
10 man who didn't.
Like, consistency hasn't really been the sort of buzzword at Sassuolo, unlike it was perhaps under De Zerbi. So, hey, those are probably the two picks. Torino Empoli might be a lot of fun actually as well, because I have been enjoying watching Empoli any chance I've had to watch them this season since they came up. Another great result, as I just mentioned, at the weekend for them. And Juric's Torino as well, by all accounts, doing well as well. So yeah, there are some interesting ones. You're asking me for one pick of the week.
Yeah, give us the Kenny pick of the week. What is it?
Kenny pick of the week. I'm going to go Fiorentina Samp.
I mean, the romantic in me would have to mention Genoa Milan, just because it's the return of one Andrei Shevchenko.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which was
narrative there as well.
That's narrative.
Very good. And yeah, so Kenny's pick, that's on Tuesday night, and Buzz, your pick is Wednesday night. So you can watch them both. Just before we move on to keeping up with the Italians, let's just formalise the good week, bad week, shall we? I don't think there's going to be much debate about this. There was maybe a shout for Atalanta or Napoli for good week, but given the historical significance of Inter's week, it's got to go to them, hasn't it?
Yes, and given the European results of Atalanta and Napoli.
And it just appears that Inzaghi's team are playing better with every match. They're not incredible, but they're improving with each and every match, which is what you need for a title run.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, and losing 4-0 in the Champions League, being the subject of a police investigation, we can't look further than Juventus, also obviously losing that game to Napoli.
And losing Federico Chiesa until the new year, yes.
Tragic.
Okay, let's leave it at that then. Bad week for Juventus. And how are the Italians abroad getting on, Buzz?
First of all, in the Portuguese league, Marítimo Madeira won 2-0 against FC Paços de Ferreira. And there is an absolute peach from Stefano Beltrame. I recommend checking the 2-0 goal out. It's a beauty. Secondly, I mentioned him last week, and honestly, I didn't think I would have to mention him again so soon, but Federico Macheda got a brace for Panathinaikos and put their victory on ice. Next, we have Michele Bon, who's managed in China, Russia, all sorts of exotic destinations, and he's just signed as the manager of Zimbru Chișinău in the Moldovan top league. And young Gnoto Danyand, who's an Italy under-21 player, and I must say, he's also 1.68 meters, scored the decisive header for FC Zurich against Young Boys, thus taking his team to the top of the table. And lastly, one Jorginho scored a penalty against Man United for Chelsea, which was quite annoying for the Italy fans amongst us. And also, it seems like he's scoring penalties with the wrong Azzurri shirt.
And getting himself a third place in the Ballon d'Or list into the mix this evening as well.
Yeah, if we want to keep up with the times, we've also got young Gigi Donnarumma arriving 10th, I believe, in the Ballon d'Or final countdown, and also getting the Lev Yashin Award. So it's incredible that a reserve keeper can win these awards nowadays.
Very good. And yeah, while we're on that, we should also mention Chiellini and Bonucci, I think, both placed in the top sort of 25. But let's start off the honourables with that, just all the Italians that placed in that list. Kenny, do you want to continue with your goals honourable for the week?
Sure. So we're seamlessly moving into the honourable and dishonourable mentions here. For me, it has to be Dries Mertens for the first goal that he scored in Napoli's second in that 4-0 mauling of Lazio. Boaz was lobbying for Scamacca to be given this
mock lobbying
because of his admittedly excellent strike against Milan. But I think just if you watch the build up to Dries Mertens' goal, it's absolutely sensational. And I mentioned their first touch football earlier. I mean, I think they strung at least a dozen passes together in the build up to that game, and at least half of them were one touch. They zipped the ball about, and then Mertens just absolutely cool as ice at the end. I mean, I think he sat a couple of defenders down and just, placed it out of Pepe Reina's reach. So just a glorious team goal. Wonderful to see. A fitting tribute to Diego Maradona.
And just to completely change track, unfortunately, Baz, very, I sort of double dishonourable for just generally disappointing and misogynistic behaviour in the
Scamacca in any other week would probably have got an honourable mention both for his goal, but Kenny's a very tough judge, and also for his general work rate. He scored a goal and also created essentially Chiari's own goal. Unfortunately, his social media outing was far less impressive. He commented on one of his teammates' celebratory post. He commented, "We raped Milan," which in any case is out of place in 2021, but especially particularly on the day where Serie A was highlighting the issue of violence against women, is a particularly lackluster way to go about things. And it's a shame because Scamacca is he should just let the football do his talking in any case. And on the subject of inappropriate behavior and things that shouldn't happen on any day, let alone on this particular day, journalist Greta Becalia had her backside slapped by a random fan while she was just trying to do her job outside of the Empoli Stadium for the Empoli Fiorentina game, which again was a very sad sight. Fortunately, the guy who slapped her has been identified by the police, and now he's going to go to court about this. But the reaction on social media by some people to this event was very disheartening. And again, we're in 2021. It's time to progress a little bit.
Yeah, thoroughly disappointing incident and very deserved dishonorable. Let's just move past that. And Kenny, you wanted to give an honorable to Gasperini.
Yeah, I'm giving Gasperini an honorable for getting Coach of the Month award. I don't think beyond the Juve game, I think the other two games that Atalanta won this week, you would expect if Atalanta have harbor ambitions to qualify for the Champions League, they would have won those games. But nonetheless, nice to see Gasp recognized, and especially in light of that fact that I mentioned earlier, where it's their best start in Serie A. So yeah, absolutely an honourable for that. And now that Atalanta are getting all of their players coming back to fitness, full back three, Hatebor back on the bench, Gosens apparently on the verge of returning, let's see what they can do in the run-up to Christmas and into 2022.
Yep, and on the topic of giving kudos for tactical organisation, Buzz, one for Fiorentina's perfect symmetry. I assume this is about tactical symmetry, is it?
Not quite. This is something I picked up on when we had our lengthy Fiorentina talk last week. And I wasn't quite sure this was right, but I'm looking at the stats again just to make sure. And Fiorentina, have, in the last 14 games of this season, they've managed to win 7, lose 7. And in the past 6 games, they've won 1, lost 1, won 1, lost 1, won 1, lost 1. So, I mean, very bizarre record, no draws so far, and very interesting to see how after what was otherwise a great performance against Milan, they suddenly drop points against Empoli unexpectedly.
And kind of takes the wind out of the sails of my prediction of Fiorentina-Sampdoria being an unpredictable game as well, I guess.
It'll probably be a win now if this record continues.
Yeah. All right, give us your social media honorable for the week, Buzz.
I'm not sure if it's an honorable or dishonorable, but when a famous Italian Twitter account suggested that Napoli would go to Spartak Moscow wearing the V for Vendetta masks, given the last game, the official Spartak Moscow account responded that they should wear a clown mask after the loss, which was spectacular. Shots fired there.
Yeah. Assisted with some sort of visual aids as well, I believe.
Yeah.
Some emojis. Kenny, your theme this week seems to be just giving honorables to managers. What's Mihailovic done?
Well, I don't know when Mertens got Spalletti's job, but yeah, this is for Mihailovic. We spoke about it earlier. We spoke about Italy going into the playoffs and facing Portugal, and just Mihailovic's positive outlook in the press conference where he was asked about this game, and he said, look, Italy are a good team. Italy have to believe that they can go and win this game. Italy should go. Well, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves here because Italy have to get past North Macedonia first. But the draw that would see them potentially face Portugal. And he said that he highlighted that Serbia had a very good game against Portugal, and Portugal had a very bad game against Serbia. So, you know, let's not all be quaking in our boots at this upcoming playoff match. Potential upcoming playoff match.
Good positive note to end your mentions on. But Baz, you've got one more for Empoli's social media.
Yeah, this is the game we just mentioned where Empoli were trailing the whole game and then in the 84th minute scored an equalizer and then scored the winner in the 87th minute. The official social media channel tweeted right after the game, "It's over, we won." And then after about a 2-minute break, they were like, "Sorry, the graphic is coming soon. We've just been celebrating too wildly in this room right now."
Very good.
And that's a local derby, so I understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you can use that as an excuse next time you forget the image to go with our episode.
I wonder how it will go down in any normal job, you know? Sorry, I was celebrating. Couldn't get the report in.
Yeah.
I intend to use that during the Qatar World Cup on many occasions.
Yeah. Well, which team are you going to be supporting, Kenny?
Oh, well, there's a question. Yes.
Whichever one I makes might be, it might be the answer.
I hope that I'm supporting two teams in that tournament.
I hope so too.
England and the Netherlands.
You're a funny guy. On that funny note,
that is time to wrap up the podcast. Thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back next week. If you don't already, please do subscribe to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your audio. We'll speak to you then. Until then, enjoy the football.
La Roma è campione d'Italia per la stagione 2000-2001.
Il titolo del 2008, l'Inter è campione d'Italia, 16° scudetto per la squadra nerazzurra.
Cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.